Welcome to Masters of Dispute Resolution on Podclips. This podcast is designed to offer valuable perspectives and insights to individuals engaged in the mediation process. Listeners will benefit from the experience of the profession's most accomplished mediators who share compelling stories of conflict and the lessons they have learned from handling challenging and intriguing disputes. Throughout the episodes, you will hear firsthand accounts of how conflict has impacted the lives of those involved and discover how mediation enables individuals to move forward free from the burden of ongoing disputes. The discussions on this podcast provide practical guidance on addressing and overcoming difficult issues, helping listeners achieve more satisfying outcome in mediation. Whether you're a mediator, an attorney, or someone who has participated or is considering participating in mediation, you'll find actionable advice and encouragement. Your host, Len Levy, is a mediator and arbitrator with ADR Services, Inc., a leading provider of alternative dispute resolution. Len brings extensive experience, having litigated complex cases for over 30 years before transitioning to mediation in 1998, and has been recognized as a super lawyer in alternative dispute resolution beginning in 2014. Len Levy's expertise and dedication set the stage for insightful conversations and meaningful learning for all listeners. And now, your host, Len Levy.
Thank you, Daryl. Welcome, and thank you for joining us for Season 6 of Masters of Dispute Resolution, a podcast designed to add tools to your mediation toolbox. We are brought to you by ADR Services, Inc. and the American Institute of Mediation. In each podcast, you have been hearing a story about conflict, the impact it had on the lives of those involved, how resolution was achieved, and the lessons learned from both the conflict and its resolution. Many of the details of the story you will hear may be altered to maintain the essential confidentiality of mediation while still capturing the core of the conflict and its resolution. Today, we are really, really honored to have, once again, Jeff Truman, who is a mediator. I don't even know how many thousands of mediations that Jeff has successfully guided parties through, but he is a full-time dispute resolution professional and has resolved a large variety of disputes between contract, construction, premises liability, catastrophic injuries and wrongful death, medical malpractice, employment, toxic and environmental torts, and partnership dissolutions. This is someone who really understands mediation process and indeed teaches as an adjunct at the at Pepperdine, the Strauss Institute, and is known for his wonderful demeanor, his skills as a mediator, and his ability to get to the essence of a dispute. And welcome, Jeff Truman, once again. Thank you.
Thank you, Len. Flattery will get you everywhere for sure. And I appreciate that very much. And congratulations to you. You've finished 5 seasons. I've listened to many of those episodes to try to learn, and they're very educational, very effective. And there's some people I hadn't heard of before who offer some great insight. So tip of the hat to you for bringing about and making and persevering. This is extra time on your schedule, and it's appreciated, at least here on the East Coast. I want you to know that.
Well, thank you very, very much, Jeff. And it's always a pleasure to talk with you. So we're going to have another chat. And today we're going to be talking about, as I understand it, a partnership blow up. And I'm not going to say anything more about it. Take it away whenever you want.
Sure, sure. Yes, it was it had the wonderful beginnings of a story that I think has a lot of inspiration, a lot of history, a lot of just wonderful connections out of high school. A couple of women developed this partnership and opened up a salon. They were friends in high school, and shortly after that, they opened up a salon in Pennsylvania, and it took off. And over the years, they were very successful at developing a reputation and a client base that just grew and grew. And I was thinking about the nature of the work that they do. It's similar to what we do as mediators when you think about it. It's a highly personal service, one where advertising doesn't really turn the needle. I mean, it's great to get your name out there, but it's not the same as having someone interface with you, get to know you, and have the service provided. So it's well, so and so gives a great haircut. Okay, maybe, but I have to experience that myself, and it can be challenging sometimes, the chicken and egg, sort of like how do I break into it when I don't have clients, but I have to have clients to break into it, just like what we do. It's great to get your name out there, but it doesn't compare substantively to the experience that someone has when they work with you in mediation in the heat of a conflict. So I wasn't called to celebrate their success, as you might imagine. I was called, I
What a
was called,
surprise.
right? I wish that would happen more often, but I was called because it was awful and it had resulted. So, needless to say, the partnership eventually disintegrated into litigation. Multiple cases were involved because, although there was a corporate structure, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later, it wasn't really observed, and just the ability for the parties to even communicate had disintegrated as well. There was a daughter of one of the partners who was involved, and that addition of the daughter, kind of as a partner, but not really, set the stage for the disintegration of the partnership and its ultimate dissolution. So it started as a wonderful story, and it did have many years of success. So I don't want to discount that. It's not as if the whole trajectory or chronology is just a series of bad news. It wasn't that way. Unfortunately, it ended with a lot of tension and a lot of caustic back and forth, but the lawsuits got resolved. I'll at least give you that spoiler, but I don't want to tell you how just yet. You'll have to listen. So I'll
Okay.
save that, the sort of the best part for later on.
A tease. I like it.
So that's what I can tell you in terms of the overview. I will tell you that in my practice, probably like most others, I try to do as much table setting as possible. I reach out to the lawyers and have initial conversations just to get a lay of the land and understand what their read, not only on the case, the law and the facts, so to speak. That's the kind of the basics as in the work that we do. But I always ask, well, why hasn't it settled? What's your client like? Is this the kind of case where we maybe should meet ahead of time? I think the higher degree of interpersonal difficulty that the parties are having between each other, the more intense the emotional fallout is, the higher likelihood I may recommend to actually meet with the parties individually, with counsel there, of course. And in this particular instance, I guess because of the distance involved, I didn't really have that opportunity because I will try to make those meetings happen in person if possible. Especially, sensitive wrongful death cases, sex abuse claims, and those kinds of cases where the emotional level runs high, I tend to try to reach out and talk to the parties in advance so that they get to know me. They can ask me questions about mediation. Usually, they haven't gone through the process before, so I just try to develop some rapport in that regard. This is an instance where, looking back on it, maybe I should have, but I didn't have the time or the ability to kind of just drive up miles away, about a half a day to get there. So, and Zoom really wasn't an option because of my schedule as well. But needless to say, when mediation finally did come round, I was well educated about the case with the lawyers and such, and it was complicated because there were counterclaims. It was not only just sort of an allegation of fraud, because essentially this partnership that was very successful had they didn't really account for the money, and they didn't observe the corporate form. And when one of the daughters was brought in of one of the partners, she is a talented stylist as well. There was, you might say, special treatment. She was able to retain what she billed and then also collect a salary that was based on a percentage of the total net left over after all of the expenses were paid. There were a fleet of other, what we'll just say, sort of associate level stylists who were essentially paying the expenses. And the partner level, the two main partners, kind of kept 100% of whatever they would charge. I don't know if other stylists and other salons organized their finances this way. It kind of didn't matter, but I was just thinking that I don't know if that's normal or not normal, but in any event, it added, as you might suspect, a lot of complication to understanding how this thing might come together. Because, you know, in addition to understanding the law and the facts, we want to understand where's the money going to flow here? Which direction? Where's the water going? And how do we need to try to redirect it? Are there other forms of currency that we need to think about? And in this case, there were, because there were loans that were taken. And I say that plural. There was a COVID loan, and there was some dispute as to whether that was really needed or not. And of course, that had to be paid back. There was an SBA loan. And again, there was dispute as to whose benefit that loan really served. And there were other repairs that were done to the salon. And it was the boyfriend of one of the partners. And you can see where this is going. It's right. Not going in a direction where clarity seemed to be possible. It looked like at every turn, it was just going to become more and more difficult.
Let me just interject a question here, because there are, I have handled mediations involving hair salons, and very often the structure is that the salon is a place where people rent space. There are no associates per se. They're just renting space, and the space that they're renting just goes, that rent goes into the income stream of the corporation or the individual who owns the business. Was that not the case here?
No, I said associate because they were not paying rent. What they were paying is, and I guess, again, I never got to the level of detail understanding whether their contribution covered a portion of the rent. Maybe it did, but I was told that they were paying other expenses like supplies and those kinds of things. And that the point really was for me to understand that the partners weren't responsible for the expenses so much as it were that the other stylists, and I'll just, you know, I just use the word associate stylists, but they could be non-partnered stylists, were kind of carrying the business in terms of the expenses. And that's sort of, for me at least, okay, answered that question. But the accounting was almost non-existent. Money was coming in, cash payments, credit cards, third-party apps. It was all over the place, and the accountants had many questions. There were plenty of holes in the spreadsheet, and that just led to a lot of questions in terms of the mediation.
Were there also, this is like deja vu for me, when you have a long-standing partnership or a long-standing relationship and things develop, you know, one may have certain strengths that they bring to the business. The other has complementary strengths. But it sounds like this one, they both had essentially the same strengths and weaknesses.
It seemed that way. I didn't identify a yin and yang to their partnership. There may be some element or dimension to, in that regard, but it was really more about how they could avoid each other as possible. And I'll comment about this in a minute, but it was really all about how can we be done if we can be, because the person in the other room is my enemy kind of thing.
And their relationship went from high school to the time that the disputes arose. It sounds like it's if one has an adult daughter, we're talking about 20. This is 20 years in the making.
Yeah, there's no question. It was a long-standing, successful partnership that lasted at least a couple of decades.
And their interpersonal relationship. Did you get into how their interpersonal relationship was being affected non-business, or did that completely go by the wayside?
By the time I got called, it was beyond toxic. It was, I don't even know if I want to be in the same building as the other person.
Got it. Okay. Well, we've got the stage set, and we're going to take a break now. And when we get back to Masters of Dispute Resolution, Jeff Truman will be sharing what happened leading into the mediation and how the dynamics of mediation worked. I'm Len Levy, and we'll be back in a moment.
Masters of Dispute Resolution would like to thank ADR Services Incorporated, your partner in resolution, and its founder, Lucy Barron, for supporting this podcast. ADR Services is one of the leading providers of alternative dispute resolution in California. Leveraging technology to drive resolution, ADR Services is committed to dynamism in the face of growing client need and an ever-evolving legal climate. Now operating offices in all major legal markets of California, ADR Services provides unparalleled in-person and remote resolution services through its exclusive panel, comprised of more than 130 of the most distinguished and talented neutrals across the state, capable of handling challenging and complex mediations, arbitrations, and other procedures in every field of law. When you seek the services of a neutral and you want results and satisfied clients, contact ADR Services, www.adrservices.com.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and Jeff Truman is our guest, who is telling us a story of two former friends and how business went south. Actually, the business didn't go south. The relationship went south. And so let's talk about what happened leading into the mediation, the whole dynamics, where did it take place, things of that nature, Jeff.
Sure. Essentially, the sort of, I don't know, the really dramatic revelation was when they could not make rent. And the question is, well, this has never happened before. What's that about? And there wasn't enough money in the checking account. And come to find out, what little digging revealed is that the daughter was getting quite a bit of sort of salary and commission, such that the other partner was unaware. And it just started with a sort of inquiry as to, hey, what happened? And it didn't seem like it was going to go off the rails, but then mistrust starts to build in and you're asking questions, you're not getting the answers that you want. I mean, we've all kind of been there. And then the names start to fly and the suspecting fraud. And then once you use that word, it's sort of just spiraled into a very ugly dynamic, such that arguments would break out while customers were there.
And oh boy,
that's right. That's bad for business, as you might imagine. And then when that happens, again, there's just a really long series of escalations that contributed to this dynamic that by the time I, again, got involved, it was clear to me that there was not going to be that mediator sort of desire to try to really transform and turn things around, not because we possess a particular special secret sauce so much as it is that we can see angles and possibilities that, hey, if we could just sort of address that misunderstanding, if we could just facilitate some communication, if we could just, well, yeah, that works plenty of times, enough times for us to get up the next day and go at it again. But guess what? Reality sometimes indicates that it ain't going to happen sometimes. And I think it's our job to keep that realistic assessment in mind and not try to pursue that thing, that unicorn, when it ain't going to happen. And that was this case.
And what, just to clarify, for those who have dealt with mediation, but have as their goal, let's settle this lawsuit. There's a beyond that Jeff is talking about. It is resolving conflict and allowing them to go on with their lives in a way that is productive in a continued relationship. At some point, there's a realization in any mediation as to just how far you can go on that day, right?
That's right. That's right. And I think, and this is where case types do play a part. I mean, I don't expect the kind of outcome in a tort where there is a carrier and there's no relationship between the parties. I distinguish that sort of group or class of cases, of which there are many different types. Right. In this instance, you have a history, you have a partnership, you have other elements of currency, of value, these loans, business potential. These partners who are moving on are not retiring, so they're not going to do something else. So again, if I'm thinking that, well, one of the ways to try to work a deal is to see if there can be a way to address the distrust, to address the misunderstanding. And sometimes, sure, we all have stories as experienced mediators that we can talk about where that's successful. I think it's also just incumbent to recognize when it's not, and to focus our efforts on resolving the lawsuit without really even spending any time strategizing around that larger goal as a way to settle the lawsuit. You know right. what I'm saying? That future yes. possibility can be a way to settle the lawsuit. Well, that's not the case here. So you feel like in some ways the working space that you have available sometimes is narrower and narrower at every turn. And this is a case in that vein, because I didn't feel like I had that. I didn't have, I was coming right. into a situation where the parties weren't going to talk. So the mediation did occur at a lawyer's office, and everyone was there, but in separate rooms. And I just simply did what we do, where it's sort of, okay, I've got all the information that you've given me ahead of time. Where are we starting with regard to demands and offers, or are we starting in another way? Should we be talking about these loans? Should we be talking about other? I try to get a sense as to what's the burning interest on behalf of the lawyers and the parties at that moment. And this was a little while ago. I don't remember exactly, but I remember talking to the lawyers also separately. And I'm sensitive to that because that looks like some sort of side deal to the parties. And I don't like that. Because that's not really what we're doing. I emphasize that we're not making decisions. What we're trying to do is identify some elements, some talking points that would help us address and focus in our efforts and make them efficient. And that's what we spent some time doing, because there was a dissolution. There was a corporate dissolution lawsuit. There was a defamation counterclaim, and there was a fraud claim. So in an effort to kind of see the best way to start pulling this apart, I wanted to talk to the lawyers and give them a sense as to what my thought was and how I wanted to lead the process. And at that time, I got some very clear messaging from the corporate lawyer about where the money should be coming from and paid to whom. And I knew based on my work ahead of the case that was never going to fly. Never. So I respectfully listened it, and I just ignored it.
Okay, so you did you talk to the attorneys prior to driving to the site of the mediation?
Yes, we had conversations. Okay. Yeah, and there were documents that they sent along the way. There were, pleadings, et cetera, but there was a lot of discussion so that I was taking pretty copious notes to understand. And I want to know who's going to be there, what role do they have to play, et cetera, because there was another family member. And then as I later learned, and as I maybe alluded to when we were talking earlier, that there was a hidden hand in this dynamic. And I didn't know if, and I learned of the hidden hand during the mediation. I did not learn of the hidden hand. By that, I mean somebody else who's outside of the circle who had influence. I learned about this person during the mediation. And it was opposing counsel on the other side that said, well, so and so in the other room isn't going to do anything until she talks to her boyfriend. And I thought, well, maybe they're telling me that. Maybe it's true. I don't know. I don't know if I need to really go find that out. Maybe that's, I don't know to what degree that's going to matter if, when you hear it at first. But then when you hear it again, you wonder.
So getting to solutions in terms of how parties are going to, what promises each are going to make to resolve this case, there's also a how do we get there and who's driving the bus
That's right.
aspect of it. So figuring those things out in a situation where you have layer on layer of interpersonal relationships stemming from or going back to high school, business relationships that existed, family relations that existed. You have to cut through an awful lot just to get to the what in city slickers they refer to, Curly refers to the one thing. And I'm not sure in this case there was only the one thing. So you're at the mediation. You understand all of these dynamics are going on. What about the attitude that the parties themselves are exhibiting? What's
There's,
going on there?
well, it's palpable distrust. It's difficult to really find out what they want to do because they're so, I guess, active and anxious to tell me about how awful the other person is and about how they did this and how we got here and how I am. And the one thing they would at least say that's forward-looking is not what they would do, but what they wouldn't do. I'm not paying her. I'm not doing this. When it comes to repaying the loan, I didn't want it in the first place. I mean, all of this root in the past and all of this declaration about what they're not going to do. So you really have to show some deference and respect and let people get all of that stuff out at first. And but that takes time. And then you've got lawyers, litigators who are looking at the clock, wondering why it's 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock, and where are we, and why is it taking so long? And now, of course, all those questions are directed at me. So, as they are to you,
And the parties are focusing on positions, what they'll do, what they won't do. In
that's
order to
right.
get this resolved, did you do a transition to, okay, let's focus on what their satisfying interests might be, the Fisher-Yuri getting to yes playbook?
Well, I knew that both I knew that everybody really wanted to be done. That was helpful to keep in my back pocket as a sort of North Star. I also knew that trying the case really wasn't feasible on a couple of levels. It wasn't feasible because of evidence. There wasn't all you really had were allegations of how we did things. Nothing was documented. The income and expenses weren't really well documented. And so there wasn't any corporate structure or form to it. And there was just everybody had their own story about what should be done, how we did it, here's what I did. I mean, none of that was, I mean, that's just, you might as well just let it ride on whatever blackjack because who knows how people are going to perform under stress of a trial and cross-examination. And then the other reason why I knew it wasn't going to be tried is because of the costs. It didn't make sense. At the end of the day, the amount of money that did ultimately get exchanged would have been dwarfed by attorney's fees. We're not talking about just a standard two-party case. Again, we had a third party with this corporate dissolution involved, and there was a counterclaim. So it's super complicated, and you have all sorts of dynamics going on there to make this thing at least a week long, right? And that's just going to eat everybody alive. So I kept reminding everybody, even though they were angry and swearing to God that they were going to try the case, I knew that that was not really the matter. I think once we could distill to a very short list of issues, we could then say, well, look, if we could get a 50-50 split on the loan repayment and then calculate that against what you're willing to pay, because that does have value, because if you're both on the loan, you're both on the hook. So you're going to, that is worth something to the other person, even though they're going to tell me it isn't. I know it's worth something. Let's add that to whatever your number might be. And then I had a small package to present. Then that at least focused everybody's discussion on something other than how awful the other side is. Right. We could then start to look at it. And there, it wasn't an exhaustive list or a determinative list, but it was a list nonetheless, a sort of a central list that would then at least, if we could get some buy-in on some of that stuff, that would be progress. And that's what we did.
Well, that's that. And so what I'm hearing is that you utilized a variation on a single negotiating text. You had a solution that you synthesized from everything that the parties had conveyed to you.
Yeah.
And that you felt might work. And then went from room to room to see which of that they couldn't live with. So that is a very, very powerful tool. And whether you call it a single negotiating text, which is usually a written document, that works in a variety of areas, including, by the way, the Camp David peace accords, okay? The fact that you have that in your toolbox is really important. And look, results like you're about to hear don't happen by accident. And knowing what mediation tool to use is the mark of the master mediator. So we're going to be right back after a word from American Institute of Mediation. And we're talking with Jeff Truman. And I'm Len Levy on Masters of Dispute Resolution.
Hi there. We hope you're enjoying another fascinating episode of Masters of Dispute Resolution. Has the show ever made you think about becoming a mediator and doing the work you're hearing these experts doing? Are you thinking about it right now? Imagine a career where you're working to help people in conflict find win-win solutions. The sense of purpose you'll feel can easily be heard in the voices of the guests on this show and its host, expert mediator Len Levy. Or maybe you're a mediator already looking to build your skill set in order to pull off some of the brilliant and out-of-the-box solutions that these guests are talking about. That's where we come in. We're the American Institute of Mediation, and we train mediators of all levels. We're the place you come to learn the basics of mediation or to raise your game in the field. We specialize in mediating commercial and litigated cases, but we teach the skills in such a way that will work in any setting. Our slogan is world-class training for the complete mediator because we feature the world's best mediation trainers and we prepare you for all aspects of being a professional mediator. Find us online at AmericanInstituteOfMediation.com and browse all of our courses that are available for streaming on demand. You can watch our courses at your convenience, at your desk, on a plane, or in bed in your jammies. We'll see you in the mediation world soon.
Welcome back to Masters of Dispute Resolution. I'm Len Levy, and we're chatting with Jeff Truman, who is demonstrating just how much work it takes to get cases like this settled. So, Jeff, continuing on.
Well, we were talking just a few moments ago, and I tripped across the analogy that I know you know, Len, and I'm sure many of our colleagues know, that you're doing all you can to look calm and collected above the surface of the water like a duck. But boy, are you peddling like mad underneath the surface to just stay afloat. And so, you know, to sort of summarize here, that it was challenging for all the reasons I stated earlier, but there was frustration also about the pace of progress being measured by how much agreement was sort of achieved by a certain time, let's say by 3-4 o'clock in the afternoon. At some point it becomes clear, and we can all identify with this, when it's not gonna come together. It's just not. It's not to say that we've wasted our time, because progress was made on important elements. You know, again, if we could agree on the 50-50 split with the loan, and we could agree on a certain date to be done with the corporation and have that dissolution paperwork filed, and again, sort of dealing with the website and the marketing materials and all of that sort of stuff, we then kind of got it to a place where we needed to know what the number was going to be. So again, sort of like strategically recognizing that all these other issues are contingent on the number, but a lot of if we do this and then that got us to a place where the numbers were really just highlighted. Okay, now, given all of those contingencies, what are we talking about in terms of a demand and offer? Trying to make it as clean and as sort of simple as possible. And that's where we got stuck, but it worked out. And the reason why is because it gave parties time to think. So we leave the mediation with a set of parameters as to what's possible, but yet we still have a ways to go on the actual numbers of offer and demand. So I summarized it, sent it out to the lawyers by email, and did what we always do. We follow up, we're talking, because litigation has deadlines, and we know that can change things, and especially a case like this, once you throw things off because the court rules one way or another, or discovery or whatever, that can change the whole formula. So I had in my mind the thought that the case was going to settle or not, if depending on what this one party would be willing to accept from the other. So essentially it was like, how much is she going to get? And rather than have that conversation, I mean, having been in the other room all day, I kind of knew what the limits were and whether we were going to get there or not, based on my sense as to how much money was going to be paid. And of course, we always take that with a grain of salt. That's what we do. I'm not vouching for anybody. But I am using that information that I've gathered. So I suggested we go to lunch. Let's meet for lunch. I don't want to do this over the phone. I want to meet in person. And that meant then me getting in the car and driving half a day one way to do that. And so we did. And I got that appointment scheduled and drove up there, whatever. When I get there, it's just the one partner, the lawyer, hadn't arrived. And so we're just making small talk, orders like a coffee and a water, and we start chatting. And so-and-so, well, my boyfriend should be here right in a minute. And it's like, oh my God, she's invited her boyfriend. That was the hidden hand of the person during the mediation whose influence was missing. And I had been told about it. And when I set up the lunch meeting, I didn't think to invite this other person. I just, because again, not a party, didn't sign off on confidentiality, any of that stuff. And she invited him. So I'm caught at that point. I don't have a form. It's like, okay, what do we do? Right. Well, you roll with it, because I can't say no at that point. Then I think I'm going to lose her for sure. And the boyfriend might think that I'm trying to influence her. So I'm going to let this roll and see how this plays. Plus the lawyer's coming. So I'm not doing anything improper. I'm not talking to her about the case before the lawyer comes. It's like, oh, okay, well, look forward to meeting him. Well, here he comes before the lawyer shows up. And it's as if I had been transported onto a movie set. Well, what movie was that? It's the Big Lebowski, because in comes the dude. All right. In comes the dude, right, to finds us immediately, you know, shorts, flip flops, long hair, the whole thing. Big guy, you know, sits down.
Please, you know, please, just, please tell me there's no bathrobe involved in this.
No bathrobe. It was like 100 degrees outside. No bathrobe. But t-shirts, shorts, flip flop, long hair, sunglasses, and comes in, flops down, and orders a beer, and starts telling me how much he can't stand the lawyer, and about how I've been to court, I've got a business, and I've been sued a ton of times. I'm not afraid. She's been really screwed over. Like all of these comments that I didn't ask for. It was basically just, I couldn't even finish asking him how he was before he starts telling me how this is going to turn out not well for the other side. You know, just the bravado was nonstop. And then the second beer comes and he starts telling me about how much he doesn't like the lawyer and she shouldn't really listen to him. And I'm just listening. I'm just letting it fly, thinking like, this is a waste of my time. This case ain't going to settle. I tried. Oh, well, onward. Well, I just listened, but I asked questions that had to do with, yeah, you know, I respect you've been sued and you don't like it. And you've sued other people. You know, it still requires time and attention away from what you're doing. And if, you know, and I think you're probably pretty good at what you do. I mean, I complimented him without necessarily knowing, but was it, you know, sort of hot air a little bit, but I was trying to develop rapport. And it worked over time, because although, you know, once the lawyer showed up, they're talking more specifically and his demeanor starts to soften in terms of the lawyer, because then at that point, the lawyer's actually sitting there. But he acknowledges with me, you know, you should listen to the mediator because going to court is going to take a chunk out of you. And you don't really know how it's going to go. And eventually she's hanging on every word. I mean, their dynamic was clear that she definitely was right, influenced by him. So he recommended that, look, if you can get X, then you should get out and be done and move on. Cause you know, cause she was complaining about how this was keeping her up at night and her health and how it, and all that is undoubtedly true given how toxic their relationship was, which was again something to remind her. It's like, look, yes, this has been a horrible experience, and yet without a settlement, your wagon is hitched to hers. Your guys are gonna stay. The process will require you to be thinking about her. She's gonna be thinking about, like, you guys are tied together by virtue of this lawsuit. And so eventually I reported back once the lunch was over, look, here's where we are. This is the best number I think is going to happen and that she'll take. So see if your client will pay it. And they did. And it got done that way. And so the lesson for me is to be flexible. When you see the dude coming, it may work in your favor, because the dude's sort of hidden influence and ability to throw in another perspective that the party respects and depends on made the difference.
So the hidden hand controlling this was at least controlling the solution. Was his dynamic involved in either causing the rift to begin with or exacerbating the nature of the rift? Could you tell that from that lunch?
Yes, I could, because of the, again, I'm summarizing the conversation, but there was a lot of criticism, not only of her lawyer before the lawyer got there, but there was a lot of criticism about the other partner and about what had happened, about what was done to her. Again, very victimized sort of perspective, but, you know, one that's very real. So again, it's not the time for me to remind her, well, you know, you didn't observe the corporate form. You didn't do it. I mean, I'm not going there so much as it is that I'm also not trying to reinforce that, but I'm just trying to focus on what it will take to get it done. I'm not trying to challenge their narrative necessarily. I'm not trying to predict, you know, or sort of throw around the fact that I worked for, you know, this court system for a while, and I'll tell you, you know, that rarely works. It just doesn't make sense to me. I would rather just remind her why it's important to think about settling this case.
Right.
And just keep hammering, because she knew she was going to move on. She was actually able to retain the name of the salon and then be able to go and start another business, which, like, again, you have a whole new chapter to write here. So let's get at it. Start with your new business.
Or one of the interesting aspects of doing mediation in person is involving the proper parties. I mean, there are instances I've seen where a person has been involved in mediation because the perception was that person was needed for a party to make a determination or to be guided in the proper way. One in particular conveyed on the podcast, it was one of the things that needed to be done was a particular party's sister had to be disinvited to participate in the mediation because every solution that was coming up was being shot down. And this could have gone that way too. You had no way of knowing, right?
No, I had no way of knowing. And I mean, I guess on the one hand, it's possible that he might have insisted on coming to the mediation. That would not have been a good idea. Because I think meeting him on the side, honestly, and having that moment before the lawyer showed up, gave me a sense of, not, I want to say who he is, because I don't judge anybody based on a lunch appointment, but it gave us time to talk in a way that allowed me to listen. Like I don't think the valuable for me to remember is to, like, I didn't come across as some sort of authority figure or as somebody who had an agenda. I was there to help. And that sort of took away any of the reasons why he might otherwise tell his girlfriend not to listen to me or to give me the where to's and what for's. Like, that never, I just didn't want to engage with him on the level of making the conflict something about some other element to throw into this awful mess. Now we've got a mediator who's drank the Kool-Aid from the other side. I mean, I didn't want to go there.
and the other thing that you didn't do, which is very commendable that you didn't, was you didn't treat it like a mandatory settlement conference that some judges who have retired from the bench will say, look, this is how I would rule if this was brought before me. So this is what you need to do. That's not your style at all.
Well, for a couple of reasons. Obviously, I never was a judge, and with all due respect, I like what I do, and they like what they did. They spent sometimes 20 years on the bench. Obviously, they had to have liked it. And you work hard to become a judge, you know. So, part of my experience starting in this world was observing settlement conferences in Baltimore City, and so it's not always the case that when they say I would rule, they're saying that in one room. But guess what? In the other room, goes the other way.
because
what they're trying to do, that's the process they know most of the time, is the process they know is to sort of try to use a prior position of authority to say, well, you know, in this room, you've got to worry about summary judgment. And in the other room, you ain't getting summary judgment.
Right. Look, we're not here to denigrate judge, and certainly a number of both Jeff and my colleagues are retired judges, are very skilled mediators, and just really are effective. Every mediator brings something to the table.
I think that it's important to draw the distinction. Of course, no mediator does the same thing every time. And no mediation group, I mean, no group of mediators, whether they be lawyers, judges, non-lawyers, accountants, whatever, who are successful at doing this, they don't do it the same way every time, at least the good ones, in my opinion, or the really talented, experienced ones. My point in saying that is to just point out that you don't know what's being said in the other room. And sometimes that does pass for settlement conference process. I think it's just important to keep in mind that, sure, there are variations. The more successful sort of retired judge mediators, in my humble opinion, are doing what we're talking about, which is a whole panoply of tools depending on the situation and on the context and on the interpersonal dynamic, knowing that, look, if my sort of considered honest opinion about which way this case might go is worth talking about, or if the lawyers want to know, that's one discussion. But just be aware that if that's all you're really talking about, that's a very thin, narrow process that, frankly, you know your case better than anybody. Don't let anybody shake you off of that. That would be my only advice to the lawyers.
Right. Okay. One last question or series of questions here. What you were doing in that last meeting was not presenting a mediator's proposal. The mediator's proposal typically is, this is my proposal for settling the case. You have X number of days or whatever it is, hours, to decide yes or no, and that's it. What you were presenting, at least I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, was, this is a solution. This is a solution that I think will work for everyone. And I'm throwing it out there to allow you to not just say yes or no to it, but give me your thoughts.
Well, I thought about making a proposal on the number, but it wasn't really the time. I felt like if nothing else, I suppose I could revisit that conversation. I think I might have mentioned it to the lawyers when we were wrapping up the mediation on mediation day before the lunch, but there wasn't really any interest in doing that. So I felt like we did all the work we could up to that point. So let's see what post-session efforts can result and reveal. So my pitch wasn't necessarily that this works for everyone. This is to say, look, this will help you move on. Whether it's in your best interest is really for your lawyer to talk about. You know, I'm just letting you know that there are some very good reasons to think about another number, because she had sort of committed that I'm not moving off of X, which was X plus, okay? And right. I'm moving off of a higher number. Right. My point in having the lunch, my agenda, was really to just recommend a lower number because it would allow her to move forward with the new business, wrap everything up, get away from this person who has been agitating her for years, and start anew. And there were other, I mean, it's not just the number. She was getting the website or the name of the business, and she was going to be able to retain other, you know, knowing that this debt wasn't going to be coming after her and so on. There were a whole list of reasons in addition to the number. It was just the number that was the final sticking point. And knowing that I wasn't going to get into that conversation with her until her lawyer was there. That was the other, I mean, it's not that, that would be to me way outside the bounds. Let's wait until counsel gets there. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, because I knew the lawyer also knew that settlement was a better idea rather than going to court because of the lack of evidence.
Right. Well, I wish we had more time, but we are out of time. And thank you very, very much for participating. I just always enjoy our conversations together. And as we wrap up, how can our listeners get in contact with you?
Well, I appreciate that. I'm on the web like everybody else. It's just my name, Jeff Truman, JeffTrueman. You can find me that way, and that has all my contact information there. And so feel free to reach out. I'm happy to help and answer questions or help you think through things, you know, whatever it takes. We're all in this together. We're all trying to generate positive change, and that's a good thing. So happy to help. And I appreciate you doing this. And it's always great to chat with you. It's like, you know, our sidebar conversations are always educational and interesting. So I value them. I appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. And I have the same feeling, Jeff. Okay. So I know you're going to be a guest sometime again in the future. We'll give some thought to another story that comes out of your, incredibly interesting and varied mediation practice. And thank you, Daryl Wayne, my engineer and producer. And
I'm your host, Len Levy. This is Masters of Dispute Resolution on podclips.io, powered by Infigen Labs, Inc. I hope you'll continue to enjoy the stories we bring you. And in the meantime, stay well, keep listening, and remember, peace of mind is enhanced when conflicts are resolved.
If you wish to contact Len Levy, you can reach him through his email at lslevy@adrservices.com, through Len's website, lenlevymediate.com, telephone him at 818-903-5562, or contact his case manager at ADR Services, 213-683-1600.